Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm in the studio with Charles Holmes from Rolling Stone, and in a minute we're going to be joined by Brendan Klinkenberg of Rolling Stone, and we're talking about the year in hip-hop, and what a year it's been. We were talking about this yesterday, and hip-hop has been the dominant genre for some time now, but in this age of streaming, it just ruled the charts this year. It just dominated.
Yeah, man. Hip-hop's had a great year. Last year, it was the most consumed genre, taking over rock. Even if you look at the Hot 100 right now, the top 10, I believe at least over half of them are rap songs, and it's by people that may not be household names. You have Kodak Black or a Juice WRLD or a Travis Scott. So this has been a big year for hip hop, and I think it's just because no other genre can really compete with them on streaming. It's crazy.
Well, it's weird. One analogy is, like, I forget the exact year. It was like 91 or something, a really long time ago. They switched over from, they used to do sales in stores for basically like self-reporting, which was like the most corrupt, messed up system ever. Just be like, hey, how many copies did you sell? And they'd like supposedly say that's what they sold. And it was a real ad hoc, messed up system. And the moment they switched to SoundScan, that was an accurate depiction of what people were actually buying. It's like all of a sudden hip hop just shot up in the charts, as did country, but that's another story. But it was just like, the more you accurately reveal the taste of the people, yeah, the more hip hop starts to rise to the top. And I mean, but it's also about pure musical dominance as well, and a diversity of sounds and styles as well. I mean, you guys were saying that there can be two rap songs on the charts next to each other that have nothing in common with each other except that you could call them hip hop.
Yeah, man, listen to the kids, bro. It's just, I think with hip hop, it's really still just innovating. You know, you have things like SoundCloud rap, and then in SoundCloud rap, you can have 20, 50 different little subgenres of emo rap or more trap, and it's just a huge, just really anything right now. And sometimes I don't even think things that are classified as rap sound like it anymore. You have Drake with one of the biggest songs, In My Feelings. Like, is that a rap song? Really? It could be anything. It sounds pop to me.
Yeah, and we should hear In My Feelings in a second. And we have Brendan Klinkenberg in the studio. Hey, Brendan.
Hi, guys.
And what surprised you the most in this year in rap and hip-hop? What like really took you aback?
I mean, that's a tough question because it feels like 2018 lasted like a decade. I think the biggest surprise was kind of a non-surprise, but it was Drake's like commercial dominance this year. He did it in an interesting way, especially at the beginning of the year where he was kind of trading spots at number one with himself, but every song sounded very, very different. Obviously, he gotten a lot of different stuff throughout the year, which we'll probably talk a little bit about. But yeah, I think that was the biggest surprise, was how you could go from something like God's Plan to Nice for What and still keep a number one spot in 2018.
We've queued up an entirely different Drake song.
and then In My Feelings.
Yes, just to show how much Drake there was. We have an entirely different Drake song ready, so let's hear that, In My Feelings.
Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding? Say you never ever leave from beside me, 'cause I want you and I need you.
So one thing we were talking about yesterday as we were preparing for the show is that the sort of youthquake of current rap is going strong. It's the generational war that was going on has been decisively won by the kids. And as you were saying, Brendan, that's the only thing that could happen. It was inevitable.
The kids always win. The youth always ends up taking over. And like, it's interesting to see who cedes control gracefully and who kind of doesn't. But yeah, you see it this year. You see like Jay-Z and Kanye had some real trouble getting out the gate commercially. The only thing that Kanye did out of his like 5 albums and a couple singles this year was a little pump song. Like, that was what it took. Nicki Minaj spent, honestly, years trying to roll out what ended up being Queen, and the thing that really hit for her was a 6ix9ine song. I think everyone was surprised by how rapid that happened. I think the gap between someone being kind of a curiosity on SoundCloud and then becoming a commercial juggernaut is a matter of, like, months. And it used to be kind of a matter of years. But someone like Lil Pump, people can be like, Gucci Gang, that's a funny song. And then you realize that that song is like really sticking around, and suddenly like he's this bona fide superstar without having to do all that much.
Yeah, that's on any level. He never did very much.
I think the difference is now it's a generation of people who grew up with the internet and know how to use the internet versus a bunch of older rappers who didn't have to really do that now. And like Brendan said, some of them this year have done it gracefully, and then others like an Eminem have not.
It's a Bane thing, like, you adopted the dark, I was born in the dark kind of thing.
That's exactly
it's the Bane theory of hip-hop.
Yeah. And I think commercially we're seeing with Eminem, we're seeing with Kanye, we're seeing with Jay, Nicki, they haven't. And honestly, Drake is the bane of hip hop, and he adopted the dark, and it carried him all year.
Yeah, why does Drake continue to thrive? I mean, he's not old. He's still a young man, but, you know, he precedes a lot of these artists. So why is he still thriving so strongly?
I think he pays attention to what he has to do. I think he, like, looks... He's kind of one of those people who, like, looks at everyone else's missteps and then is like, how do I do that? Also, he's a preternaturally talented, like, stylist. Like, he picks up subgenres like their instruments, and he's just kind of like, okay, I'll make a bounce song now. And it doesn't sound quite like a bounce song. It sounds like a Drake song. He just does that over and over and over again. And with the goal just being like, I'm just going to keep people's attention for another month.
He's the best wave rider. I think he looks at Jay-Z as kind of like his idol. And I think Jay was very good at it, but he wasn't perfect at like just picking up the wave, like him adopting UGK and kind of like showing it to a national audience, being like, yo, look at this group. They're amazing. And now it's the biggest song in the country. Drake has taken that and he's just done it like infinite amount of times. And each time he does it, he gets better. He's done it now with Blueface literally yesterday, a rapper that almost nobody has heard, who's a meme, whose biggest line is welcome to the meat show. So he's just great.
What's the name of that song?
What is the name of that song? I don't even know.
Yeah, well, Blueface is tough to keep up with. You'll have to, there's been some press, but it's Drake's always just posting what he's listening to.
Drake and, like, literally DM'd him on Instagram.
Now I see what you're talking about. Okay.
And it's like now it's people are reporting it as news, like, is Blueface gonna get a Drake feature? And like we've seen it with Blockboy JB and all of these different rappers this year where it's just like Drake even just DMing you now puts you in an entirely different stratosphere of coverage, which is insane.
Yeah.
Got it.
Drake's the best A&R in the game.
Yeah. Well, he's kind of as smart as he is talented, or as talented as he is smart, which is a dangerous combination. Like, that's how you get to be Drake. Because he also has a new song with Meek Mill, like, that came out, like, today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. More slaps than the Beatles, man. No lies.
I guess he's clearly been paying attention to the chart news, I guess, which is, according to the Hot 100, he does have more slaps than the Beatles.
So Drake never stops paying attention. He's just like an evil genius of like, he sees everything, he reads everything, he listens to everything. And it's just, it's very annoying how just great he is at running a rap career, no matter the quality of the music at any given time.
On the youth level, and we were talking about this, I mean, one of the things that streaming seems to reflect is if you are 13 years old, you're listening to the music you love hell of a lot more times than like a 25-year-old, and especially like a 30-year-old. And for the first time, we can measure that. And that's part of why you've got people who aren't household names, I think, like zooming into the charts, because this is this thing that we could never measure before. And you were saying that's not different, it's just we can now perceive it.
Yeah, the way the charts work used to be just where is the money? And now it's a little bit more skewed to, I mean, it still skews towards money, but you also see who's getting listened to as passionately. If someone buys a Christmas album, listens to it three times, it's not the same as like in the streaming world, it's not going to quite get the same number of plays. And you can kind of see just like who's actually the most popular just by like going on Spotify.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest example of that probably this year is somebody like Shake West with Mo Bamba, where that's a record that was percolating. Like, it had a really great video. It was very big on rap Twitter, you know. It's rolled out that like he has a deal with Travis Scott and Kanye. And when Brennan and I went to the show at Madison Square Garden, it's like nobody really knows in the crowd many Shake West songs. And then Mo Bamba hits and it literally felt like MSG. There was an earthquake. Like the kids just jumped at once and like they just didn't stop shouting. And that shows you what streaming does. It's just like, and if you look at his streaming numbers, they're getting healthier because now he has what I think it's in the top 10, which is, I was like, how is nobody, if Shake West was sitting in Applebee's, you could walk past him and not know who he is. And that's not an indictment of him, it's just showing how fast rap stardom happens right now.
Yeah, no, it's, we got the Bane theory and the Applebee's test. Yeah. And he's failing the Applebee's test. Let's hear that song though.
Calling a young nigga phone. Where's Ollie with the motherfucking dog?
One thing that more than one person has pointed out is that the line between a novelty hit and just a hit seems to be blurred right now. That has always seemed to be an example of that to me.
I think a lot of these SoundCloud rappers have a sense of humor. Like, I think that the line is blurred because, like, the song can be funny and be a hit at the same time. Mobamba's kind of funny.
For sure, yeah.
And I think that, like, to somebody who doesn't really understand, like, oh, this song is going to ring off when they play it in this place or this place. If you're just, like, listening to it and you're like, ah, this is a joke, then you might call it a novelty hit until, like, you keep hearing it out of every car window in New York for the next, like, 4 months, and then you have to start to realize there's no such thing as a novelty hit anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I was going to say that exactly. I think even if you look at somebody like Eminem, like, he was a novelty until he wasn't. Like, his first big hits, like, My Name Is and shit like that, like, that was a novelty.
Absolutely.
And now we look at it and nobody thinks that anymore. Nobody thinks, like, oh, like, this was supposed to be a joke. You just listen to it, you're like, oh, that's when Eminem blew up.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting. I mean, I think it applies to artists as well in some ways. I mean, it's like Cardi B, right? Everyone loved Bodak Yellow. Everyone thought it was great. It was obviously great. What was entirely unclear was whether it was just like a total fluke one-hit wonder situation. You know, I mean, her resume to that point did not suggest someone who would be making an album that is topping critics' lists as one of the biggest albums of the year that was great. You know, she was someone who had been on reality television. Just was not the path that traditionally would expect to lead to great artistry. And that stereotype is obviously wrong because it did, right? So it's hard to know what to make of that.
I think with Cardi B, like, yo, best rapper alive. I think what she did that, like, you can put up her against Nicki, and you think of somebody like Cardi B, is she's very candid. Like, any girl in New York can go out there and strive to be Cardi B because she's documented her rise. Like, she started on Instagram. She's like, I was a stripper. I'm not ashamed about it. She went on to Love and Hip Hop. It's like a very, very organic way of saying, like, here are all of my faults, where Nicki honestly spent the last year trying to hide all of her faults, and it kind of hurt her because she's like, I don't know how many girls now personally want to be Nicki in the same way they want to be Cardi.
That's interesting. What do you mean hiding her faults?
I think Nicki, like, to Brendan's point, it took her almost, what, a couple years to get this album off the ground, and
it was a very major label way of rolling out an album where there was a lot of, like, singles that were kind of rolled out and they didn't get the response that they wanted, and therefore they needed to rework the whole album. I'm obviously not privy to, like, what her and her team were discussing, but it seemed like there were a lot of false starts on that one. And then this year, when she didn't get the sales that she wanted, she kind of kept throwing this, like, extended tantrum about criticizing Travis Scott for Astroworld's, like, merch sales, and Kylie tweeting about it as the reason she didn't, like, top him in, like, sales. And it's just kind of like, Travis has been releasing music on a very regular pace and, like, doing stadium shows at a very regular clip for a couple years now, and he's got his biggest album. He might be bigger than you now. And I know that that's a tough thing to hear for someone who's, you know, being rich and famous generally drives people crazy in, like, a very specific way. But, you know, you just, I mean, Queen Radio was, like, a really good example of what it's like to be in Nicki's head. And it's someone who wants you to think of her as, like, the preeminent superstar.
And to Nicki's credit, like, Queen is not a bad album. It's like, if you listen to it, you're like, this is a very, like, average Nicki Minaj album when put up against her discography. Like, it holds up, but it's just like the narrative wasn't there in the same way it was with Cardi. And I honestly think where Nicki faltered, where Drake didn't, is like Drake's whole thing is like, I'm going to take young rappers and kind of like all of us rise, where Nicki didn't necessarily do that. And a lot of other female rappers have accused her of basically trying to stop her bag, and this was a big contention. Who knows if that's true, but I think that hurt her in a way that it helped somebody like Drake.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it may be, you know, there's gendered aspects to it that I don't quite know how to break down. It's tough to be the biggest female rapper. It's a trickier thing, and maybe there isn't enough precedent to be. There's so much precedent to be beefing with other women rappers and not as much precedent to be lifting them up. It would have been hard for her to be the first one to maybe go into that paradigm. I don't know.
It was unfair, I think, for us. I think a lot of the way we cover Nicki was a little unfair because it's like we're so used to, like you said, pitting female rappers, yes, against each other, where it was way more fun for people to do that than to actually stop and be like, yo, why is this happening? Like, right, that doesn't get clicks. The nuanced take of, like, why do we care so much much about Nicki and Cardi does not get the takes. The, oh, they're beefing and we're going to have 10 headlines about it. Like any hip hop site, I guarantee you, probably ran 100 headlines about that beef, and maybe what, one third of that about the actual music.
Right. And if anything, the sort of bad mood which she greeted everything, it worked against her, but it might have also worked in her favor because it kept her kind of in the headlines, just all her weird complaints about various things when she started beef with Irving Azoff. I don't even remember what that was about. Remember that? That was crazy. She was just starting beefs left and right and just on her like Apple radio show. And weirdly, that did at least keep her narrative going, I guess.
I think the big winner in that was Apple.
Yeah.
Not Nicki, but yeah. And then the other thing is Cardi did surprise everyone by releasing a like extremely good album. That one came out, and you know, if you'd listened to Cardi's mixtapes, and especially if you heard Bodak Yellow, you knew she could rap, but there was no precedent for her to do this. Like, it's kind of that like four quadrant major label album that does a little bit of everything and like has some like pop cuts. She has like is trying to hit all these different pockets and then doesn't really misstep too often, which is just this like kind of like what rappers were doing in like the early to mid 2000s. I was just like impressed that someone could still hit that, and also someone who was still so early in their career, because you know, I definitely knew she could do an album of Bodak Yellow's, and I was like, if she just does that and one of them hits, she's golden. But she did something a little different.
Yeah, now she turns out to be, I think, way more talented. I don't even know if she knew that she was this talented until she made this album.
She seems pretty confident.
I think she also just, like, she worked. Does something that, like, a lot of new rappers don't, which she listened. Like, if you read her interviews, she's very, very, she admits, like, hey, I had producers and I had A&Rs and I had all these people trying to help me, where your average rapper is, like, in their bedroom and they make a hit and they're like, I don't need to fucking listen to this old white A&R. They're like, no, fuck you. And, like, Cardi listened and it helped her.
That's interesting. Well, we should break, but you're listening to Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm Brian Hyatt. I'm in the studio with Charles Holmes and Brendan Klinkenberg. We're talking about the year in hip-hop, and we'll be right back with more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and I'm in the studio with Charles Holmes and Brendan Klinkenberg, and we're talking about the year in hip-hop. We're saying that the speed of consumption has picked up, and attention spans have gone down. We're just zooming through songs, even maybe artists. But you were also saying, when we were talking about this yesterday, Brendan, that's always been a huge part of the way like rap works. It evolves quickly and moves quickly.
Yeah, rap songs trends move faster. It's got a lot more regional sounds. And people can make songs quickly. Definitely since like the Lil Wayne mixtape run of the late aughts, you kind of saw that you can make songs as fast as you can. Like anyone, like there's no like rate on how many songs you can release that people will listen to. And then this year, it just feels like that's all starting to catch up on like a major label level, where you have these A-list artists all dropped this year. Pretty much everyone in rap who's in like the top tier, except for Kendrick, released an album in 2018, sometimes two, sometimes four, sometimes five. You have Migos releasing a solo album, then three solo albums. You have like all this sort of stuff that you it's just coming out at such a clip that nothing seems to last. I talk to rappers all the time. I'm like, how long do you actually listen to that album? They're like, 1 week. Because then the next Friday, you have another thing that you need to keep up with.
It's weird though. I mean, like someone like Kendrick makes albums for the ages though. You know what I mean?
He's very, yeah. He does. I mean, it's tough with Kendrick. Like something like Damn really kind of hit that. It sounded like 2017 and sounded like it would last past 2017. To Pimp a Butterfly did not sound like 2015, but I think you might go back to that in 10 years and be like, this has aged incredibly well.
Yeah. I think someone like Vince Staples also makes albums that will last, you know?
Yeah, Vince is an interesting case because his album this year, FM, was the most fun he's had on an album in a long time. I was a huge fan of Big Fish Theory, but I don't think that the rap community was as enamored with it as I was, mostly because the production was wildly experimental and like took a lot of...
It was crazy electronic stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it took a lot of stuff from like English dance music of like 2008. It was a real left turn for a rapper. It kind of seemed like he was picking beats to like see if he could rap over them. And the answer was yes, but people were like, why'd you pick these beats? And then this year, he kind of just put out an album of slappers. Like, he was just like, we're going West Coast, heavy bass. The album is like 22 minutes long, and he's just as good on those beats as he is on his left field, like, electronic stuff.
That was probably the first album that it sounded like his Twitter reads, which I think was always the distinction, where it's like, Vince Staples is funny, and you're reading his tweets, you're watching your like his interviews, and then you listen to the album and you're like, where is this kid?
That's a good point.
They were still great, but FM, you listen to it, you're like, oh, this is what this Twitter would sound like in real life.
We should hear It Feels Like Summer from that album if we can. But yeah, you were saying, like, I was questioning because Drake used the word slap as a noun, and I wasn't sure if that was a first usage, but you're saying that is a thing. You can say that song is a slap.
You can say that. It's like a banger. It's a slap.
It's a slap, yeah.
It's a bop.
So you were saying that this album is full of slaps.
Yeah. It's not bangers. I wouldn't throw, like, probably any of this on at a party, but if I was, like, driving down the street, I could play it all the way through and bump it, and people are like, oh, that sounds good.
All right, let's hear it.
Summertime in the LB, wild. We gon' party to the sun, or the guns come out. JB, first one, foul gal, playing ball. Now the whole city love you, a how. Boy, we know they wasn't down from the get go. Dirty got a dozen rounds.
What else, kind of artistically, and we'll get back to trends in a second, but artistically for you guys, what, if anything else, kind of rose to that level where it's like, oh, that's actually gonna be. We'll still be talking about that maybe in a few years, if anything.
It's tough to say, because a lot of that's tied to, like Charles was saying, like there's like car songs and rap songs, or like party songs. Like, I think one that I'm going to keep going back to, and the one that like kept me listening to it, was Whack World by Tierra Whack, which was this just weird, weird album that's just 15 songs long, each is a minute long. And so it kind of works as like less an album and more like a business card for someone to be like, hey, I can make 15 different kinds of songs. Look how easy it is. Like, it was kind of like putting everyone on notice. There's never been a debut that made me more excited for a follow-up.
Do we have something from that ready? Let's just hear anything.
He likes my diamonds and my pearls. I said, thank you, I designed it. Not your average girl. You need a swag and I'll provide it.
How about for you? Anything jump out just on a pure artistic level that...
Oh man, you know, to me, the best rapper alive right now is Pusha T, that Daytona. You know what I'm saying? Like, all right, when he said, my favorite line is, where were you when Big Meech brought the Tigers in? Like, it's just like, I don't know. I was probably like on the JV wrestling team, but it just brings me back to that time where like, I wish I was selling drugs. Not really, but it's like, Daytona is just like, it's just like fucking put it in my fucking veins. It's seven songs. It's Push talking his shit. And he's been solo for so long. And I feel like his clip shit is great. He has arguably two classic albums under his belt. And he's been solo for a while now. And everybody's like, oh, he pops up on a Kanye song like Runaway or Don't Like the Chief Keef remix. And everybody's like, this verse is great, but his albums never match that. And Daytona was the first time where it really did, and the whole rap world cared about a Pusha T fucking album, which is insane. And it might not be something where you can see it on the streaming charts, but I guarantee you on end of the year list you will see it. It's gotten to the point now where with somebody like Drake, people are still talking about the fact that Pusha T beat Drake, and that song dropped in what, July maybe, in the summer, and we're still like, oh, Drake still didn't have a response. And I think that speaks to just how great of an album and a year that man had.
It's gonna be like in 5 years suddenly Drake's gonna have the response. When we least expect it, it's gonna come back. He's gonna slaughter him. But yeah, I mean, back to the, just on a trend basis, just the, and the speed of things. So how is that manifesting in something like Tekashi 69? How is that? Explain the phenomenon of Tekashi. the ups and severe downs of the phenomenon.
Tekashi 6ix9ine, if you don't know, is a Brooklyn rapper. He's kind of a social media savant more than anything else. Like, I like when people are asking me, like, what's the deal with him? I'm like, think less like rapper and think more reality TV star who's like on Instagram Live all the time. And the music's like a soundtrack to that show more than it is like its own discrete product.
He's like Ashley Simpson.
No, he's not. So he kind of started hitting, let's give it like the last 18 months. He has these very big, brash hits with these violent, arresting music videos and some child sex charges to his name. That is like public knowledge. Everybody knows it. He's still popular. He's kind of playing the heel in his like grand WWE show that he's invented for himself, where he's the bad guy and like everyone might hate him, but like they'll pay attention to everything he does.
And he has a thing where he goes back and forth where it's like, this is really me, and then sometimes when necessary he's like, oh, I'm just acting bad for my image. He even said that about the 13-year-old on his lap thing.
I mean, it's usually when he gets brought to court that he says that. But sometimes he'll also like hint that he's not a bad guy, he's just playing a role, except that if it's just a role, he's still done most of the stuff that people would be upset about. But, you know, he had a very quick rise. The music hit in a very, very specific way. And then the constant controversies sort of kept him in headlines and kept kids coming back to him.
Gummo was like the breakthrough song, right?
Gummo was his biggest song. And then this year was Fifi, which was the song that Nicki Minaj brought him on. It's not great.
Let's hear Gummo if we can.
Pop these niggas like a willy nigga. You a silly nigga in a hole with them belly niggas and them hoover niggas. You run up and they shooting niggas. We hooping.
It's not like he's without talent, you know?
No. I mean, he's not without talent. I think most of the talent is like intensity more than anything else.
Personality too.
Yeah, like he's charismatic. He comes across on the record. It's like DMX without a command of melody.
He has a passing acquaintance with melody, but not a command.
Yeah. And then, so the thing with him that's interesting is the persona that he's invented for himself starts to catch up to him this year. So the child sex charges were hanging over him for his whole career, but they happened before he became a famous rapper. So he's kind of like become a millionaire and then brought back on charges for something he did like 4 years ago. And you see like a very different version of him if you go to these court cases, where he's very polite, says it's all an act. It was the only way out of like Brooklyn for him. And then, you know, the timeline on this is very, very loose, and it's something we're trying to like nail down in some reporting. But at some point in his music career, he gets involved with the Nine Tray Bloods, which is a Brooklyn gang. And that led to about 10 days ago, 11 days ago, he got arrested by federal agencies for racketeering charges, which is kind of a blanket term for associating with gang members and committing crimes with them. So him and his ex-manager or associate were both brought in along with three other guys. And he's now facing 32 to life, according to the prosecuting U.S. attorney, which is something that, as I've been following the case, seems like it's going to be tough to get out with no prison time. Bail has been denied once. His lawyer plans on appealing it, but has not done that yet. So he is currently in custody, and unless something changes, will remain so until the trial on September 4th of 2019.
And it could be the end of his career, I guess. You
know? So it could be the end of his career, but also he's likely to have a number one album on Monday, because his latest Dummy Boy just came out on Tuesday after some delays because of the arrest, and it's streaming pretty well. Pretty much all that's standing in between it and a number one spot is A Star Is Born, or maybe Astroworld.
And Travis Scott, who we'll get to. But on a somewhat similar note, we're seeing these careers get cut short by one way or another. Lil Peep died. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's everything moves faster now. It's just, and I don't know quite like what that is. Like with XXX and Lil Peep and 6ix9ine, like their careers happened insanely fast. And part of that was because they were talking about the things that led to their downfalls respectively. Like XXX was involved in a lot of stuff. His shooting was not related to like his career per se, but like he rapped about dying all the time. Peep, similar thing, where like his music was often about abusing drugs, and so when he dies for abusing drugs, it looks like he's like almost a prophet talking about his own like coming death, and like he also knows that that's why kids are listening to him in like with the fervency that they are.
I mean, in some ways, like Post Malone is like the cheesy version of Lil Peep, right? I mean, it's like the dumbed down like
Post Malone is the cheesy version of a lot of things.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just Lil Peep. I mean, like, they operate in, like, a vaguely similar lane in that they're white guys bringing in outside influences to hip-hop. Like, they're starting with rap drums, and then, like, what if I, like, introduce some guitars here? Peep had a more interesting, like, central guiding, like, thesis to his music than Post Malone ever has. But Post Malone, I would say, like, makes better songs. He has had a longer career. He's had a lot more resources. He's doing a different thing.
I think also with Post, it's a thing where it's, like, it's happening so fast for Post. I think he was like one of those last artists where like he had White Iverson and then it was a little bit slower for him. And then it took off where with like XXX and Lil Peep and 6ix9ine, it's just like they get all of the money at once and it just goes where like, I don't know if Post Malone, he was like at the beginning of streaming.
Yeah. I mean, Post rise was remarkably fast compared to like someone 3 years before Post, and remarkably slow compared to someone 3 years after him. Like, the time to become a star now, I would peg it at like 90 days.
At the same time, you were saying that the SoundCloud lane, or the sort of door from SoundCloud to the charts, may have shut, right?
Yes. So we still talk about SoundCloud rap as if it's this like bubbling genre, but it's kind of fragmented so many different directions since last year. And then also the idea that SoundCloud was the platform that could make you a star was this like tried and true formula from like 2015 to 2017. And if you go on the top like 50 or 100 songs on SoundCloud now, you're just seeing the same names. Like, it's just the ones who just made it through. So it's a lot of Juice WRLD. It's a lot of Lil Pump. It's kind of almost like a slightly skewed version of like the top songs on Spotify.
So it's basically dead then, yeah.
I think that the most popular songs on SoundCloud is like no longer the easiest indicator. I think it was doing a lot of work for A&Rs, frankly. Like, I think you would just kind of like jump on there and you'd be like, who on this list hasn't been signed? Let's give them some money.
And I think also like to Spotify and Apple's credit, like they just realized like, why are we letting SoundCloud incubate all these artists? So now it's like there's this thing happening on Spotify where it's like, this person out of nowhere will have this huge hit and you're just like, where did it come from? And then it rolls out that they were like a plant and like a label has signed them. Like, it's just, it's...
Yeah, I think there is still a ton of like artists who are working on SoundCloud and still a lot of like discovery to be made. It's just not as easy a narrative anymore, and the platform isn't like fulfilling this like one very specific job that it used to. It's still just a place. It's just like gone back to being a place where people put music.
I like to think it makes no sense, but I'd like to think that Lil Xan somehow ended it all, but I guess that's not what happened.
I don't think Lil Xan had any lasting impact on anything, but
I mean, if that's closed, what's next?
I just don't think it's as easy. I mean, I think the more than ever we're going to be chasing like children and like seeing where their attention's going. I don't know where that is.
Is there a downside to that?
I mean, because it's my job, I try not to look at it in terms of downsides and upsides. It's just kind of a thing you cover. It'd be like, you know, it's like asking if the wind blowing in a certain direction is a bad thing or a good thing. And like, for some people it's good, some people it's bad. I think for artistry, you're probably not going to get any great albums like if you're following that approach, but you're going to have a lot more interesting strains of like genres coming out. There's just a lot to pay attention to right now. And I don't necessarily know where that's all going, but I'm going to try and keep up.
We didn't talk much about Travis Scott, who was having like a coronation year, just played a crazy show at Madison Square Garden that I missed. But it's like, Charles, you wrote that he's the best live performer in music, period.
Yeah, man. I think Travis Scott, this was his year. I think for so long, the narrative around Travis Scott was that he was a biter. He wasn't that talented. He doesn't really rap. He just had all of these things against him. But obviously, he had the cosigns of being signed as a producer to Kanye and as a rapper to T.I. But for so long, people are like, oh, well, he makes bangers, but he's just a shit rapper. And I've always been on the train of like, yo, Travis Scott is amazing. And finally, Astroworld was the moment that it truly coalesced. And now he has the second biggest hip hop album of the year behind Drake, which I don't think anybody was predicting. But if you've kind of watched his savvy moves over the years, you realize he's become like a new type of celebrity. His baby mother is Kylie Jenner. That's a big boost. No matter, like, when at MSG he brings her out, and I've never heard a crowd scream so loud for a non-musician. They were just like, "It's Kylie!" And oh, I was just Jesus. Like, what? But like, it speaks to.
So wait, what does she do? He brings her out, and what does she like? She just stands there and waves. What happened?
No,
she gets in a roller coaster.
They have a roller coaster that goes over the whole stadium, and so they get in. She's kind of just sitting there, and he's performing on the roller coaster, and they stay on it for, like, just going back and forth real slow for, like, four songs.
And it's funny, like, watching, like, I watched her face the whole time, and it's, like, excitement. She's, like, Instagram, she's like, "I'm on this roller coaster." And then after, like, the first song, she's just kind of, like, kicking her feet to the beat, being like, "All right, I'm ready to go backstage again." That show was a perfect example of just, like, the cult of Travis, or the, like, the cult of clout, where it's, like, you know, he obviously has the Kylie Jenner boom. He has all of these things in the show, like an inflatable spaceman that's wearing his signature Jordans, and he's wearing another version of his signature Jordans that are going to go for thousands of dollars. And every kid in the stadium, these suburban kids and their moms and dads, are wearing Travis Scott's Air Jordans, and they're putting on Travis Scott merch that's like $65 for a t-shirt. It's just kind of this whole cloud of clout, and the people that are opening for him are either signed to him in terms of Shake Waste, or Travis Scott gave them a really, really big record in terms of like Gunna or Trippie Redd. If you look on the Billboard Hot 100 today or a few days ago, Sicko Mode's the number two song on the country. He has a song with Kodak Black that he's featured on that's like at number nine. He has a Mo Bamba, Shake Waste is signed to him. So it's like he has almost half of the top 10.
That's crazy.
Are in his sphere, are either on tour with him or signed to him or are him.
What should we hear by Travis in a minute? It's tough because there's a lot going on.
Me and Brendan are going to go.
Sicko Mode's the big one.
Yeah, Sicko Mode's the big one. But
Yosemite's the best song on
Yosemite
the album.
Yosemite is the best.
Let's get those both ready. But yeah, sorry, go on. Yeah.
And I think what this year showed for Travis is that people are buying into the brand more so now than ever, and he was the best at marketing it. And I think he was the best at marketing it in a way that a lot of the older crowd were not. I don't know how many kids want to be Eminem. I don't. Like, they used to. I don't know in 2018 how many people want to be him in a way that they want to be Travis. People want to dress like Travis. They want to buy shoes. They want to buy his merch. And they want to follow Kylie and all of the stuff that's happening with his baby.
So let's hear Sicko Mode to start.
Made this here with all the ice on in the booth. At the gate outside, when they pull up, they give me loose. Yeah, jump out, boys. That's Nike boys hopping our coach.
And
this
shit, and then Yosemite as well. We pull up, give me the
loot. Chanel dress, clean up a mess. I eat a flesh, you know the rest. Turn up a hun, copper Rolex. Shine like the sun, you truly blessed. Lose 1% in the clip, boy, like a hoopity jets.
And I think also with Travis, what he's done with his success is he's kind of shown that there can be the opposite. So I think on for hits, generally, they're very formulaic. And by all accounts, Sicko Mode should not be a hit. There's three different beat changes. There's three different artists on it. There's tons of samples. It's just changing so much. It's not something that, like, I would say your passive listener is used to. It's not very repetitive. Brandon and I were having a conversation, like, the best thing Drake probably did this year was the intro to Sicko Mode, and Travis just cuts it off at, like, the apex, which shows his genius.
Charles mentioned this earlier about how people thought that he was kind of just this, like, trend rider. He kind of, like, took everyone else's ideas, and I think, like, it had this, like, opportunistic edge. But if you go to these shows at this point where he's, like, really got the catalog to kind of fill out a full stadium show, Travis Scott's just, like, a functionalist. Like, he's mostly just, like, what's gonna work? And, like, all of his songs are designed to work in these very, very, like, specific things. And if you're not someone who's going to Travis Scott shows or, like, hearing Travis Scott songs and, like, losing your mind to them, they don't really work as well. And so, like, there's a reason critics are not, like, all in on him, or haven't been until this year. And it's because, like, he's very unconcerned with, like, what anybody except getting a reaction does for him.
Absolutely. So this has been today's Rolling Stone Music Now. We tried to capture the year in hip-hop, thanks to Charles Holmes and Brendan Klinkenberg. And we'll be back next next week here on SiriusXM Volume Channel 106. In the meantime, we are a podcast. Download us as a podcast. Subscribe to us as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to leave us a nice review if you can. And in the meantime, thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week.